A Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned in to the R1 News, your stop for news and current affairs on the airwaves. 11 to 12 weekdays here on Radio 1 91 FM. Te reo irirangi kotahi.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ata, kei te whakarunga mai koe ki te reo irirangi kotahi. Ko Zach Toku Ingoa, and you're listening to the R1 News Show for Rapere, te toru te kou o Pipiri on the Radio 1, te reo irirangi kotahi station. No nāianei on the program, we have National MP Michael Woodhouse coming on the program to talk about the government's new political fundraising rules and party transparency. Following that, we have an interview about Aotearoa's status as a space-faring nation with Maria Poza, who's acting as this year's as the director for this year's Otago Foreign Policy School. After that nifty talk, we have a little astrology report for all you Geminis and Cancers listening in. But firstly, we've got to get you updated, listeners. Here's Eileen Corcoran with the news and weather.
The R1 News headlines. The R1 News weather.
Tēnā koutou, ko Eileen Aho. Police are moving in on an anti-COVID mandate protesters at Mahunga Bay in Wellington after nearly 4 months of occupation. A splinter group of the 23-day-long parliament occupation in February, which culminated in violent clashes with police, the group are now being asked to leave, with those who do not leave being arrested. The group has associated itself with the occupation of Shelley Bay, which sought to protect the bay from development. However, a spokesperson from Mo Whenua, the group behind the Shelley Bay occupation, has denied any association. The government has designated two US-based far-right organisations as terrorist groups. The two groups, Proud Boys and The Base, have both participated in a variety of far-right and neo-Nazi marches and attacks. The Proud Boys were heavily implicated in the attack on the US Capitol on January 6, 2021. By designating the groups as terrorist organisations, the government ensures anyone who recruits for the groups or provides them with material support can be prosecuted under the Terrorism Suppression Act. The government has not said what motivated the designation. Auckland Council says Cody dieback is happening at a slower pace than previously thought. A survey of 68,000 Cody trees in the Waitakere Ranges found the disease limited to specific areas around the edge of the forest. Councillor Richard Hills told RNZ that it is encouraging news for Cody, but more work needs to be done to protect the trees. And those were the headlines on the R1 News. Now, ki te pēhea te āhua o te rangi. How's the weather?
The R1 News weather.
I tēnei rā, Ōtipoti will have a high of Te Kaumāwhā, 14, and a low of Rima, 5, with cloud cover turning to afternoon rain and possible hail this evening. Āpōpō expect a high of Te Kaumātahi, 11, and a low of Whitu, 7, with cloud cover and westerlies building in the afternoon.
That was the R1 News headlines. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram and tune in to R1 News at 11 a.m. on weekdays.
Kia ora Eileen for those fantastic news headlines and weather updates. Coming up very, very shortly on the show, we will have MP Michael Woodhouse coming on to talk about the new political fundraising rules, which were announced earlier this week by Justice Minister Keri Allen. But firstly, let's get to a tune. Here's The Garden with California Here We Go.
And and I can give it back.
Yes, I can.
I must be cautious not to find myself trapped.
Don't get trapped.
California, disguising what we lack. California,
can you cut me some slack?
California, here we go. 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 California, here we go.
Kia ora and welcome back to the Ra'awa News Show for Rapere Te Toru Tikau o Pipiri here on Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. That was The Garden with California, Here We Go. And up now we have an interview with Michael Woodhouse. But before we get to that, we'll give a little bit of prelude to this political fundraising story. So earlier this week, Justice Minister Kiri Allen announced a raft of fundraising changes to political parties, such as a requirement for parties to publicly announce donors who have contributed over $5,000 to a party. These changes have come at a time when both National and Labour are facing criticisms for holding cash for access schemes, and with both parties, also facing court battles over fraudulent donations. Is it time to change Aotearoa's political fundraising rules? Joining me to speak on political fundraising and democratic transparency is Dunedin-based National List MP Michael Woodhouse. Kia ora, Michael. How's it going?
Kia ora, Zach. Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Just trying to get through all this cold weather.
Yeah, well, I'm in Wellington. It's the last day of the sitting session before a three-week break from Wellington, so we're all looking forward to that.
Yeah, kapo. Now, would you say that these new fundraising rules, which limit secret donations to $5,000, among other things, are going to hurt Aotearoa's democracy?
Well, firstly, there's two things I think about that introduction. They're not secret donations. They are anonymous donations. I think that distinction is important. Secondly, we haven't seen the details of the legislation yet, so it's not been possible for the National Party caucus to form a view on that. But I think it's fair to say that we take a pretty conservative position on this. We haven't really seen the case for change. While you rightly point out that there have been some breaches of the initial law, they would be breaches in any event, regardless of what the thresholds are. So we're not convinced that there's a need for this to happen.
Okay. Do you share the same concern that members of the public do around party transparency and special interest groups affecting politics on a bigger scale, given the cash-to-access schemes which both your party and Labour have taken part in?
Well, I think you describe them as cash for access. I wouldn't. I think there are a number of people who want to engage in the political process, and that's going to be absolutely important. It's also important for people to be able to make contributions to the party of their choice without the fear of a sort of opprobrium or penalty being applied to them, particularly individual donors who, for example, may work in the public service. Or have employment arrangements that they don't particularly want their employers to be disclosing. And it's possible, for example, for members of trade unions to nevertheless support parties that aren't parties on the left. And I think that disclosure of those sorts of things can be problematic for them. So there are good reasons why there are thresholds. The question, obviously, is what that threshold should be. We're not convinced that the current thresholds as they are, which are pretty similar to other jurisdictions around the world, need to be lowered.
How do you relieve concerns around party transparency with regards to who and where parties are getting their money from then?
Well, there have already been a number of changes to electoral law to prevent the sort of sheltering of donations into trusts and so on that took place, you know, 15 or 20 years ago that were problematic. They've already been fixed. So if individuals disclose above the current thresholds, they will have, you know, the parties do have an obligation to disclose. It's not possible to sort of pull them and then have sort of individual donations from donation vehicles taking place. So, you know, I'm pretty satisfied that people are able to participate meaningfully in the democratic process, safe from the negative impacts potentially of being disclosed.
Now, National warned earlier this month that the new fundraising rule changes, such as publishing annual financial statements, would have a chilling effect on democracy because parties would not be able to conduct the same operations with an expected loss of income. Now, do you think this loss of income could be viably recompensed through public funding of political parties?
Yeah, the question of public funding isn't one that the government is currently actively considering, although it's probably going to come up in the context of an independent review of electoral law that's going on at the same time. And it is really interesting that you've got sort of three various reviews at the moment, the one that's led to these recommendations, another independent review of electoral law, and the Justice Committee conducts a review every 3 years. When it comes to taxpayer funding of political parties, I don't think the appetite is there for that. And it actually creates problems for example, small parties that want to become big parties. How would the taxpayer then feel about, you know, a small party that might only have one or two members? They would feel aggrieved if they didn't get as much funding as they believed they could raise themselves off their own efforts. And then sort of big parties like mine, which went through quite a big drop in the number of elected members, you know, what would the trigger for the level of funding for each party be? The last thing I would say about that, in terms of actually the private donations, while you talk about sort of the big donations, one of the trends globally, particularly with payment systems through the internet, and Barack Obama in his US presidential campaign in 2008 proved this emphatically, is that a lot of the raising of very large sums of money in the United States were because of a plethora of very small donations individually. They might be over the threshold that is being proposed here. But actually we're moving away from big sort of corporate donations, and we're spreading the net much, much wider thanks to the ubiquitous nature of social media and technology.
Now, Labour's rationale for changing these rules is that they kind of want to inoculate Aotearoa from political corruption and backdoor discussions which the public doesn't have any knowledge about. How would you prevent corruption in Aotearoa without severely limiting anonymous donations?
Well, as I say, I think there are already strict rules in place for the prevention of that type of thing, and the three court cases that are going on this year are examples of how breaches of the law will be prosecuted. I think you've also got to sort of think about the fact that people do want to have influence over the policy setting process, and whether you're a business organisation or a trade union, the ability to be able to lobby elected representatives is very real and necessary in a democracy. Linking that with contributions is wrong, but the law already prevents that.
Do you think that electoral reforms like these, even if you might not agree with them, are signs of a kind of healthy democracy that is introspective?
Yeah, look, we'll have that debate when we see the black letter law. As I say, we haven't actually seen the bill that Kerry Allen announced earlier this week. So I hope that our justice team will be able to get a copy of either the draft bill or the bill well enough in time for us to give it a good look. But we'll consider that carefully, and obviously that debate will go on in the House, and there'll be an opportunity for the public to have their say in Select Committee.
Yeah. Do you think that there is much of a public kind of drive to get more transparency with regards to political parties and funding?
Look, I think we already have that, and that's the point the National Party has made. What we really want to do is make sure that we also have an active participation in our democracy, and so we'll keep a weather eye on whether this bill is going to reduce the degree to which people feel confident in supporting political parties if their donations are made known. And as I say, there are very good reasons why people might want to remain anonymous. You know, things like employment or trade union membership might be problematic for them if it was known that they supported a party that perhaps those groups didn't.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much for coming on the program to speak with me today, Michael.
Cheers, Jack. Take care.
Have a good day. Take care. That was Nationalist MP Michael Woodhouse talking about political fundraising and political transparency around political fundraising. Very good chat there. It's currently 11:16 here on the Rapere R1 News Show. Up next on the program, we have an interview with Dr. Maria Poza, who is the acting director of this year's Otago Foreign Policy School, which this year's school is looking at Aotearoa's role in the contemporary political space landscape. So we'll be having that interview around 11:30. But before then, let's hear some tunes. Up next on the tune front, we have Sweet Charity by Mr. Bungle. Take care.
This is the R1 News on Radio 1 91 FM. Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
Thank you. wanna smash it up. I wanna break it down. I want a wall of tears to wash away.
Kia ora, welcome back to the R1R news show here on Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi for Rapere Te Toru Te Kau o Pipiri. We just heard from Underworld with Dark and Long from their fantastic 1991 album Dub No Bass With My Headman. And before on the program we had Nationalist MP Michael Woodhouse join us to talk about some changes the government is making to how political fundraising works, and in an effort to make political fundraising more transparent. Now on the program, we have a chat about Aotearoa's role in space. Coming up this weekend is the 56th Otago Foreign Policy School. It's a two-day course where attendees of the public learn about a pressing foreign policy matter, and they can ask questions to experts about said topic. In 2022, the school is looking at Aotearoa's role in the contemporary political space landscape, and the event features guest speakers such as Minister of Foreign Affairs and Trade Nanai Mahuta, as well as a range of academics and state representatives from across the world. This may have you wondering, is Aotearoa a powerful political actor in space? After all, Aotearoan-based rocket business Rocket Lab has launched satellites for both the US military, and just yesterday, the company launched a moon-bound rocket for NASA. Aotearoa has also become a signatory of NASA's Artemis Accords in 2021. It's an international agreement which seeks to bring humans back to the moon by 2025, and it expands states' space exploration capabilities. What a mouthful. Yesterday I spoke with Otago Foreign Policy School 2022 director and space politics expert Maria Pozza to determine what involvement Aotearoa has in space and what benefits being a space-faring power brings to your country. Here, that interview is now.
Alrighty, so how would you describe Aotearoa New Zealand's role in the contemporary political space landscape? Are we forging our own path, or are we more so sticking with our allies who are already quite established?
There's so many things that Aotearoa is doing that really defines its role in this contemporary space environment. Are we forging our own path? Absolutely. It's probably a little beyond the status of our current state of affairs to say that New Zealand is still an emerging spacefaring nation. It's actually probably more clearer and accurate to say that it has emerged. There's a couple of things to take into account here. So first of all, when we think about New Zealand's placement on the planet, there's not much air traffic. So that means then that when we compare that to other nation states, if there's not as much air traffic going on, and if we don't have as many aeroplanes flying through the airspace, it means that we can conduct more activities, more launches, for example, from New Zealand into space. So if you can conduct more launches, then that means just a natural precedent. You're going to keep developing, and you're going to be doing far more research and design, and you're going to be implementing more technologies. You are going to be on a very, very high trajectory, if you like, for development of technologies that will be utilized in space. So that's the first thing, really, that we need to consider then, is our placement is really, really strategically beneficial for us to engage in more technological development when it comes to launches, especially in outer space. We also have to look at our internal framework. So we have a regulatory framework in place that governs space activities, and it's overseen by the New Zealand Space Agency. Now, something that we have to think about is when you compare the New Zealand Space Agency to other nation states' space agencies, let's just say NASA, for example, we only have about 40 people or so that work in the New Zealand Space Agency. So what does that mean? Well, it's another benefit. It does mean decisions can be made a lot quicker. Plus, you're actually speaking directly with the team at the New Zealand Space Agency, as opposed to having to go through a lot of different bureaucratic circles and chains in order to get to where it is that you need to get to. And similarly, you have that engagement directly with the agency, and they can really understand your project, and it's far more collaborative. So we have to think about then the foundation upon which New Zealand's forging path is built upon, and that is it's a commercial foundation. So having that collaboration directly with our agency is certainly beneficial to that strategy, to that end game, in order to forge this path. So there's a lot of really great benefits for Aotearoa at the moment in becoming this emerged spacefaring nation and developing its space program into the future.
What would you categorize some of the advantages of Aotearoa being a spacefaring power? Is it a worthwhile investment considering some of the other things we could be putting money into, such as climate change?
Look, climate change is a really, really important topic. So too is research and design that can be undertaken in space. For example, the MRI was developed in space first, and we use it every day here now on Earth for, you know, as part of our health system. I see the point that you're making, but there is a lot of important work that is undertaken in outer space for us as humans here on Earth as well. What I would like to see, certainly, is more development in a sustainable means in which we can access space and do it in a way that is, for want of a better expression, it works alongside our environment. Rocket fuel is obviously it's a pollutant, but we need to be able to access space in order to develop these technologies that help us in our everyday activities. So there is a balancing act that needs to be undertaken. But I think in the future, what we're going to see is more development in fuel, for example. And we've seen it here in Aotearoa. We've seen a lot more development and incentives into buying electric cars, moving away from the petrol industry, for example, and fuel. So we've seen the development of electric cars, and especially incentives by the government to help us buy those electric cars. And I think we're going to see the same in the space agents, in the space arena. And I really think that that's probably where New Zealand is going to be forging its path as a spacefaring nation actor. I think we're currently looking, as I understand anyway, there's currently a couple of groups looking at alternative energy sources. And it's going to happen, but it does take time, it does take research, it does take technology. I think that we will get there. Putting your money in different places, I think money's going in the right place at the moment.
Well, what are some of the challenges that lie in Aotearoa becoming a spacefaring nation? Will we need to strengthen our cybersecurity and military defences to necessarily protect our space infrastructure?
As a spacefaring nation, something that we're always concerned about, any spacefaring nation or whoever else, be it a private entity, we have to protect our assets. They are not cheap. Now, something that's really exciting about Aotearoa is we're very well situated on the planet to undertake low Earth orbit satellite activities. So you use less rocket fuel, for example, which is good for the environment, and less time, energy, and a much more vast airspace to enter the low Earth orbit. So that's certainly where New Zealand is making its mark as a low Earth orbit launch provider at the moment, which is really exciting. Assets, even in low Earth orbit, they cost thousands as opposed to millions when, during the Cold War, nation states used to utilize far more often the geostationary orbit, which is about 33,000 kilometers from the Earth and has a very special relationship with the equator. So it's almost literally that your asset is placed over an area on the Earth. And as the Earth rotates, so too does the asset continue to be placed over that area. So the geostationary orbit was really very highly sought after. But LEO is really interesting because it's closer to the Earth. It's much faster. You can complete an orbit within 80 to 100 minutes or so there and about. And if you have strategically placed small satellites, because you don't need big satellites in various parts of the planet, then you can provide the same sort of services as you would be providing from GEO. So that's the first exciting bit. And getting back to your question then, protecting our assets, even if they are only a couple of thousand dollars now, we still need to protect those assets from all sorts of things. Certainly penetration from other assets that may accidentally collide with our assets and cause space debris. Going back to that environment point, space debris is a big environmental issue. Similarly, something else that we have to consider as well is the cybersecurity over our assets too. We need to protect transmission from both uplink and downlink through encryption to make sure that we're really securing our messages to satellites to make sure that, you know, they're doing what it is we want them to do and that the information they're providing back to us isn't corrupted in any way. It's coming straight back to us without any infiltration. So back to your question then, really, you know, the advantages for New Zealand to become a spacefaring nation and what does it mean for investment when looking after our assets? Something that's so important to take into account is that New Zealand is a good international citizen. That is our reputation at the international level as a good international citizen. So whilst we are a partner with Five Eyes, it is also important to really understand as well that we have good relationships with many other nation states, whatever their positioning is at this moment in time. We still maintain relationships. In my mind, the investment then, it's probably the same investment that any nation state would be putting in place for their space assets. So remember, you've also got non-state actors, those private space, private entities. They're also putting in protective measures over their space assets. So I think what we're going to see is probably for the time being, much of the same normality over the usual space security over those space assets. But that may change in the future. I wish I had a crystal ball.
Is there much international law governing what states can and can't do in utilising space?
Zach, how long is this interview? There is a lot to go through when we're dealing with international space law. But look, I will say this. There is international space law governing space activities. And something that's really important to remember is international law is different from domestic law. So domestic law, we must abide by as citizens or as people here in Aotearoa. We must abide by the laws. And, you know, everything we do, as long as we're not breaching the law, we can go ahead and do it. But in international law, it works a little bit differently because it's between nation states. So they usually, states choose to adhere to international law and they usually sign things that look a little bit like a contract and we call those treaties. And they can either be bilateral between two parties or they could be multilateral between many parties. And those documents outline what it is that the states choose to adhere to, what they choose not to do, what they choose to do, and how they choose to cooperate and work together. There's five major international treaties pertaining to space activities, and those treaties look at things that nation states choose to abide by. Now, one of the most important things, of course, and you know, going to your point here, is under the Outer Space Treaty, 1967, and under Article 4, there is a general prohibition on the use of nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction. The problem is that with all of the major international treaties pertaining to space activities, they are the product of their time. And they were developed very quickly, which is fantastic for an international treaty. Usually they take many, many years to be agreed to. The treaties were developed and agreed to very quickly. So again, fantastic and a real look on good cooperation there, certainly during a time of heavy tension that was the Cold War. So it's really quite amazing when you think about it. We've got these treaties dealing with outer space. You know, the idea is the higher you are, the more you can see. And so from a military and defense and security perspective, space provides us with a great vantage point. But we have these treaties, and historically treaties take a long time to negotiate. And these space treaties were drafted and agreed very, very quickly. So we look at these treaties and we do find various flaws in them. So that prohibition, for example, again, a product of its time in the Cold War, did not define what a nuclear weapon was or what a weapon of mass destruction was. Neither did it then limit any other scope of other uses of assets already in space for aggressive means, for example. It just simply had those two things. Now, you might know what a nuclear weapon is, but there's various ways of defining it. And the same is true for a weapon of mass destruction. There's various ways of defining what is a weapon of mass destruction. And now in this present age, Zach, something that's really, really keeping me up at night is whether or not cyber and cyber infiltration is a weapon of mass destruction. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if it would fall within that definition, but it's just something that, you know, I think about, and I think it might be time for us to revisit these treaties and maybe bring them up to speed with how the world has changed so much in the current age.
Kia ora, Dr. Maria Poser. That was the interview I had with Dr. Maria Poser, who is this year's acting director for the Otago Foreign Policy School, where she'll be directing the school and looking all into this topic about Aotearoa as a spacefaring nation. It's very, very fascinating stuff. I didn't know most of what they told me, which is no surprise, but it's very fascinating to think that you know, little old Aotearoa reaching out for the stars, isn't it? Up next on the program, we have the classic astrology report. But before then, I say we get to a little tune. So up next, we have Space is Only Noise, If You Can See, by none other than Nicholas Jar. You're listening to the R1 News here on Rāpere Te Toru Te Kau o Pipiri Pūritia Kia Raka. Take care. Kia ora, you listen to the R1 News for Rapere, Te Toru, Te Kau, or Pipiri. Have you checked your watch? Have you checked your watch? It's bloody astrology time, folks!
The Radio 1 Astrology.
Assalamu alaikum, kia ora, g'day, haere mai, and welcome to the Peabody Award winning Radio 1 Te Reo Iring. Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi Astrology Report. This week we're tackling the problematic pair, y'all, Geminis and Cancers. Now be sure that you're in a low conflict environment, because things, they might get a little bit spicy, you know. Up first we have the two-faced Geminis. Although you'll be centered on maximizing your financial gain today, try not to push your luck, Geminis. With the sensitive Cancer moon forming a harsh T-square with Pluto and Mars, you may need to tread lightly in securing that bag. This cosmic climate should serve as a warning for you spilling your emotions online, Gemini, which may as well be a Herculean task, honestly. Later in the day, you'll experience a drastic shift in energy when the big old moon enters Leo. This change may help you see the world with more clarity and passion, and Gemini, you must utilize this energy to communicate your thoughts and needs with your ride or dies, should you want to make the most of your day. Now onto you, crustaceous Cancers. Managing professional responsibilities whilst maintaining healthy boundaries with your career could feel like a challenge today. But honestly, when is it not for you, Cancers? Am I right or am I right? Hashtag grindset, hashtag grind or die. Now, as the moon forms that harsh T-square with Pluto and Mars, you'll begin to analyze the real cost of success. Are you, like DJ Khaled, suffering from success? It's a rhetorical question, because everyone will be sure to know when you make it their business later on in the day. When the moon enters fearsome Leo, you'll feel a bit more stable in your heart and mind. Now make good use of this energy by treating your flatmates to a day without conflict or worrying about conflict. Yeah. That sounds absolutely fantastic. I wish I could worry about conflict. No, I'm messing with you guys, of course. I don't have to worry about conflict every day, day in, day out. That would be ridiculous. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the Astrology Report. Oh my gosh, I feel like there was quite a little ramble there. It is now 11:51 here on the R1 News. Up next, we have music from an old school Gemini, a self-described old school Gemini, Kanye West. And the song in question is amazing, because you know what? His music is kind of amazing.
It's amazing, I'm the reason everybody fired up this evening. I'm exhausted, barely breathing, holding on to what I believe. And no matter what, you'll never take that from me. My rain is as far as your eyes can see. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing. I'm a monster, I'm a killer, I know I'm wrong. Yeah,
I'm a problem that'll never ever be solved. And no matter what, you'll never take that from me. My rain is as far as your eyes can see. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing. I'm a monster, I'm a maven. I know this world is changing. Never gave in, never gave up. I'm the only thing I'm afraid of. No matter what, you'll never take that from me. My rain is as far as your eyes can see. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing, so amazing. 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 It's amazing.
Sodium, die high blood pressure, either let the feds get you. I'm amazing, born on a full moon. I was bred to get it in, no spoon. That's why I'm so goon. Summertime, no June. Big family, small house, no room. They like, oh God, why you go so hard? Look what he's been through, he deserves an applause.
So amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing, so amazing, so amazing, so amazing. It's amazing.
News headlines. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news.
Oh, kia ora, welcome back to the R1 News Show here on Rapere Te Toru Te Kau, or Pipiri. Hope you guys have all had a fantastic day. I sure have had a fantastic time hosting this show. It's been marvellous. So what do we have on the show today? We had quite the groovy little time. We had a National MP Michael Woodhouse come through and talk about political fundraising changes and what that means for our democracy and his party's perspective on it, which is essentially maintain the status quo. Not surprising, coming from National, considering that's kind of the ideological ideology. And then we heard from Dr. Maria Poza, who is currently directing this year's Otago Foreign Policy School, about Aotearoa's role as a space-faring nation. It's pretty fascinating stuff. Then we had the cheeky little astrology report.
You've Remember been tuned in to the R1 News, weekdays from 11 to 12 here on Radio 1 91 FM, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram.
Thank you.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more at r1.co.nz or wherever quality content is found.